Do you own a small firm? Or if you don't own a firm, would you like to start one? Paget gives firm owners all the benefits of owning a small firm, plus the backing, playbook, and confidence that comes with being backed by a large firm. Stay tuned to hear more about Paget later in the episode.
If you'd like to earn CPE credit for listening to this episode, visit earmarkcpe.com. Download the app, take a short quiz, and get your CPE certificate. Continuing education has never been so easy. And now, on to the episode.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another Federal Tax Updates podcast. This is Roger Harris, and Annie is still on her special secret assignment, and she'll be back shortly with the podcast, but I'm really excited about who our guest is today. And I'm happy to introduce the CEO at Paget and a current member of the IRS Advisory Council, Amanda Aguilar. Amanda, welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I didn't do your background justice with just talking about your role here in IRS. So talk a little bit, tell everybody a little bit more about you. I'm sure a lot of people, if you've been active in the accounting industry and been to shows or conferences, you've probably heard Amanda, but for those that this is the first time they've heard from you, tell them a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are today.
Well, sure. So I am a CPA. I have been a CPA for a long time, going on 25 years, and started originally at a Big Four firm, then had two babies back to back and went on a little bit of a sabbatical. And then when I came back in 2013, I decided to start my own practice. And so folks who have been around the space know that's around the time that cloud software started to get really popular. So I got really involved with accounting technology and loved it. I started to put cloud accounting software into my own practice and then helped others do the same thing. So fast forward another, 8-9 years when Jeff Phillips, who's our CEO, decided to invite me to become the Paget Chief Operating Officer. And so in my role at Paget, I get to do what I did for my own firm across our entire network of U.S. practices. So,
yeah. And like I said, certainly if you've ever attended any Xero cons or involved with Xero, I mean, she wrote the book on Xero, so she should be a familiar, I guess, voice, because you can't see us, from Amanda. What I thought we'd talk about today is probably something that I don't know if either one of our day-to-day jobs at Paget, but it's something that I know we talk about with our offices is, as you are listening to this, I'm going to say tax season is over because April 15th has passed, but don't everybody yell at me and tell me tax season doesn't end on April 15th. Amanda, we know there's a lot of work that's done after April 15th. But for a lot of taxpayers, particularly the individuals, this is the end of tax season. This is how they see it ending at April 15th. And what we want to talk about today is, what do we do now, both from a looking back and looking forward standpoint, to help make our business better while it's, I guess, fresh in our mind? Or maybe you'll do this after you hopefully come back from about a week or two at the beach. So kind of set up what we're trying to do here today and why we think this is important, because it's not going to be your technical tax course. It's going to be more of a practice management discussion.
Right. So, so when we think about busy season, the crux of that being probably 8 weeks-ish, where we are feeling under the gun, we're getting pressured from clients. As you said, clearly there are deadlines around the year. Right. And we have kind of a second bite of tax season in the fall, but February 15 to April 15 is really the toughest time. So hopefully everybody out there listening to this has taken a minute to recharge themselves, to get away from the office for a sec and rebalance their lives, taking care of their families, everything that gets put to the side, right, during those
really
8 weeks.
Put off.
Right. And so what we're going to talk about today is, when you're ready to come back and objectively look at the way those 8 weeks went, where do you start? What do you fix? And how do you move forward through the other 10 months of the year?
Yeah, because I think it's safe to say nobody ends a tax season. And again, whatever. I know you're a sports fan. Her son plays basketball, and I'm a sports fan. To some of us, we're at the end of the first quarter. Some it's halftime. Some it's the third quarter, and some we're at the end of the game. But wherever you are, we need to reflect back on what has happened and how do we build on the good things and not repeat the bad things. Because I've never talked to anybody who came out of a tax season and said, well, that was perfect. I wouldn't mm-hmm. change a thing. So now's a good time to do it, as you said, after hopefully coming back from some time off. One of the first things, and I don't think we do this enough as an industry, but Amanda, should we look at our clients? I mean, you know, because clients are a big problem or a big help in how a tax season goes. So what do we do about our clients at this point? Make sure they pay us.
Right. Well, I think the first step in sort of evaluating your practice, you know, end of April, beginning of May, is to really look at the clients and not just emotionally. Because, you know, everybody's got those clients that are very loud, that are very, they complain that, you know, you can say, okay, well, I know this client's a bad client, but what about all those ones in the middle? What we suggest at Padgett, and this is sort of the first step in what we call right-sizing practices, is actually list every single one of your clients, put it on a spreadsheet, get it out of your tax software. But list every one of your tax returns for busy season and put their fees next to it. Figure out what they paid right. you. Put that there, and then look at how they would rank. So there are going to be some clear A+ clients, right? These are the clients that have a great attitude or treat your staff really well, are very understanding of the pressure of busy season. They send in their records when they're asked. They respond to questions, you know, and they're also paying a market fee. So they're not the ones that are the, you know, loss leaders in your practice, but these are the A+ clients. These are, if we could have as many of these as we could, we'd have, you know, a perfect life. And then, so that's probably pretty easy for you to identify on your list. Then identify your F clients. Who are the clients that are just rotten and miserable and complain about everything, don't respond to emails and phone calls until it's the 14th, and then they want to know, you know, can I come in 20 minutes and pick up my return? They're probably making comments about how expensive you are. So those are the Fs. So list them all out, your A's and your F's, and then start looking at the ones in between. So why weren't they A+s? Can you make them into A+ clients by training them how to use software or how to use your processes or to submit things digitally? Can you get them to the right price? You know, maybe they're great clients and they're easy to work with and you want to help them, but they're way underpriced. So can you get those clients that are in between up to A+s? And you've got to pay attention to this right after tax season, because I know you haven't had delivered children. I have delivered 2 children.
No, I have not done that.
And I can tell you that in the moment you think it's the worst thing ever, but then, you know, a couple months later, you're like, that's great. Let's have another baby. So it's kind of the same thing with tax season, is unless you're in the pain of the moment, you're going to have a false reality about the way it actually went. So it's important to do this quickly. So list all your clients and give them a grade. That's the first step.
Yeah, and involve your staff in this process, because many cases clients look good to you because all you do is shake their hands, pat them on the back, tell them what a great job, you know, they did last year with their business or their whatever, and your staff says, I hate these people. These mm-hmm. are the worst. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how your staff would rate them compared to how you would rate them, because you want A+ clients and you want as many as you can get, but they got to be A+ to you. They can't be A+ to everybody, I should say. You don't want them to be A+ to you and Fs for your staff.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, so I had my own practice for a long time, still do, but I don't work in it very much. And we did a big tax practice for a number of years. And that was one hard line that I had. Like, if you were rude to my staff, it doesn't matter what you pay me. Because staff is very hard to find. Clients are easy to find. Staff is very hard to find.
Right.
And I would go to the mat for my clients. So pay attention to that, or ask your staff, you know, who do you think is just not somebody you want to work with and let them have the authority to make those calls on that. If your staff tells you, man, this person doesn't treat us well, that's an immediate F and they get cut.
Right. Yeah. You need to stick up for your staff because you really can't be successful without them. And as you mentioned, it's hard to find good staff. And if they're in a work environment that they're not going to be happy in or don't feel rewarded for what they're doing, you don't want to have to go out in the marketplace and try to replace them because there's just not that many out there. You mentioned right sizing, and I want to dig in a little bit more to that. You know, a big issue in our industry is work-life balance and trying to maintain a proper relationship with family and health and all these other things because it's historically not been something we're good at. You know, we wear a badge of honor how many hours we work during tax season without realizing the cost of that, both to perhaps ourselves and our family. When you talk about right-sizing, kind of talk about how that helps also achieve work-life balance, which is, again, I think maybe one of the bigger problems facing our industry today.
Yeah, I have a mission to end the martyrdom of accounting practice owners. You know, there's it's only us, by the way, only the people that are listening to this podcast. Nobody else in the real world cares, thinks it's a good thing. Nobody else thinks it's a good thing that you are, you know, working 6-7 days a week, 12 hours a day, and you know, generally unhappy and not talking to your partner or children. So nobody outside of our industry believes that that's, like you said, a badge of honor. So it is possible to have a great practice and also have a great non-work life. So when we talk about right-sizing at Paget, what we're talking about is doing the right kind of work for the right kind of clients, for the right price, with the right staff. So it's all those things. And when you've got this this magical blend of all those things being right, what happens is you become more profitable, your average per client revenue goes up, and generally your workload goes down. So one of the metrics that we measure at Paget across our network is how many hours our owners are working, and we really want that to go down. I mean, I remember in my public accounting days, you know, I was rewarded for having more billable hours, which is fine as a staff, right? Like when you have staff, you want to get value out of them. But as an owner, you really want more billable hours to go down. So what happens when we go through a right-sizing exercise is that we eliminate the bad clients, we keep the great clients, and we increase the prices of the middle clients generally. And so our per return fee goes up, our annual revenue per client goes up, but our workload starts to go down. Or if we end up with keeping the same number of clients but at a higher rate, what that does is it buys us some capacity. So then we have additional revenue. We can go out and hire more staff or put in other resources so that we are, again, spreading out that workload and getting more of a work-life balance.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these things that I think that, you know, we have examples of people who are very successful at this. So a lot of people say, well, that's not possible. It's tax season. You got to work 20-hour days. And no, you don't. I mean, it's very doable. And people who make it a priority, and that's one of the things I try to tell people, is it kind of starts with you if it's your firm. You need to set the goal to have proper work-life balance and let everything else change from that, as opposed to changing that. And because sometimes it's easier to just work longer than to make a hard decision with a client. We also talked about staff. Think about how much easier it is to recruit staff into a firm who doesn't require them to give up family time and put health at risk and all those sorts of things. It's not just you. It's everybody that works in your firm.
Well, I will tell you, the generations that are coming behind you and I aren't putting up with it.
No,
you know, I mean, right. They wouldn't do it. So I finished graduate school in 1998. So I guess that makes me a Gen X. The folks behind me have zero interest in billing, you know, 60 hours a week. They won't do it. They just won't do it. So if you don't retool your practice to get it to a place where you can hire folks that work a reasonable full-time job, you're not going to have staff.
Yeah. And it's true. I mean, we're talking about tax firms and accounting firms for small businesses, but you see it across the industry. Fewer people are taking the CPA test. Fewer people are going into college and you know, majoring in accounting. And a big reason for that is look at what you're working to become.
Right. We've been the worst commercial for for happiness that exists.
Right.
You know, why are we surprised? It's just we shouldn't be surprised. And the reality is it's becoming a smaller and smaller pool of folks to help us with our practices. So you got to fix it. You got to fix it.
And we talk about, you know, going through this process and having clients decide that they're not the right fit for you because you've set some rules. And one of those rules is this is my minimum fee or this is how I charge and whatever the case is. And the clients, you know, go somewhere else. And we sometimes get confused when we're in high demand because all these clients are coming to us that other people have done this. And now they're looking for someone to go baby them like they were told wasn't going to happen anymore. So be careful, you know, take advantage of the fact that you're in high demand to give you the courage to do it. But be careful of people knocking down your door because they might be the people that somebody else kicked out. And you don't necessarily want to bring them into your firm unless they're willing to make changes to fit your business model.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things we coach with our firms is objectively deciding who your right, what the right kind of client is for you. So I started my own practice in 2013 and bootstrapped it and went out on my own. I was a single mom. Like I had a lot of pressure. I had to pretty much take anybody who walked in the door. So somebody came in that was a restaurant, I was doing their, you know, restaurant tax return and their accounting. If somebody came in that was real estate, like I was learning these things on the fly. And I had to do that at the beginning. But I got to the point pretty quickly that I realized that was incredibly inefficient. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to go learn special rules for each one of your clients. It's much more efficient to pick a couple of industry verticals or pick a couple of client profiles and really focus on that. And so what I'm saying, I understand there are caveats to it, right? I can sit here on this podcast and say, you know, you should have an industry vertical and you should never take clients that don't fit you well. I know that there are some conditions to that, especially when you're starting out. But I will tell you, as soon as you can get to that and get to that place of specialization and, you know, a persona that is your ideal client, it gets much easier to say no to the wrong kinds of clients. So we aren't bending over backwards to accommodate, you know, nonprofits or trusts or whatever these, you know, kind of one-off issues are. We can say, well, we just don't do that. It's not about you, client. You know, it doesn't have to be a personal thing. It doesn't have to be personal, but it's just like, we don't do that. That's not what our practice does. Here are some other great practices that do, but we don't do that. And the sooner you can get to that and have your boundaries, it gets easier over time. And it's just a more profitable way to run a firm.
Yeah. Well, and if you look at, you know, professional firms of all types, we've gotten into a world now of more specialization, to your point. Compared to the metal, we used to, you know, if you go back and watch Marcus Welby and whatever the TV shows were from, you know, many, many years ago, every doctor was this GP. They did everything. But now there's a different doctor for every part of your body. There's a different lawyer for everything that you need. So specialization is not only okay, it's the norm. And it's, to your point, it's okay to tell somebody, I don't know that. I don't do that. And because there's no margins to be made if you have to learn everything to do it one time.
That's right.
You get repeated, then the learning curve is there. So specialization is actually a very common thing that clients are used to dealing with. I think sometimes we think our clients deal with us differently than they do with everybody else. You know, that somehow they want to walk into a doctor that'll do everything instead of here's the doctor for your heart, here's the doctor for your head, here's the doctor for your feet. But we got to be the same way. Specialize, focus, and search out clients who meet what your definition of your expertise is.
And what you want to do. I mean, I think a lot of us by our nature want to help. We right. have this knowledge that for so many people is really overwhelming, whether mm-hmm. it's tax, accounting, software, whatever. Like, we know it. And so it's easier for us to do this thing that we see our friends and family and acquaintances really struggle with. And so we want to be helpful and we want to solve problems. I mean, that's, you know, part of our nature too. We want to solve these people's problems. But what we have to do is remove ourselves and kind of take a much higher view of our practice as a business. Right. And think of it as a business. Like, how would you advise your client to run this business called accounting firm? Right. And it's probably not taking everybody that walks in the door for $25 an hour. You know, it's much more strategic. So that's what we're talking about doing post tax season. Is like, okay, now's the time. Take this little break after the busiest part of the year and look at the business of your business. Figure out what would you advise your client to do if this was, you know, if these were the financials, this was the efficiency, these were the metrics. How do you rebuild it? And so that's what we're talking about today.
Hi, I'm Jeff Phillips, CEO of Padgett. We've been helping firm owners grow the right way for over 50 years by providing marketing, technology, and of course, tax support. It's like hiring another 20 people who help you run your firm, but for a tiny fraction of the cost. And if you like this podcast, remember that these are two of the national team leaders at Padgett that exist to support Padgett firm owners. So to learn more, visit PadgettAdvisors.com/podcast or PadgettAdvisors.com/podcast. Now, let's get back to my colleagues Roger and Annie for the federal tax updates.
Yeah, and a couple of comments based on what you said. We are better at giving advice than taking our own advice. You know, we may tell a client to do everything that we won't do for ourselves. So, number one, listen to yourself when you're advising clients and do that for yourself. Secondly, I don't want to give the impression that at the end of this exercise that we're talking about, you're going to have more free time, but you're also going to have less money. The reality is you're going to have more money and more time, which I'm not sure there's anything wrong with that result.
Not to me.
I mean, even if you have the same money and more time, mm-hmm. I mean, there's just so many ways to benefit from this if you will just make it a priority and look into your firm. And we're talking primarily here about clients. You want to make sure mm-hmm. that your firm has the clients that you can serve best, that appreciate what you do for them and are willing to pay you what you're worth. And if you do that, you will have time and you will have money and you'll have better clients.
Yeah, we've seen some of our firms go through this very deliberately, and you know, 9 times out of 10, they're ending up with more revenue at the end of the day because they are stripping out more capacity than dollars. And so they're backfilling it with better clients. But it does take a little bit of a leap of faith. I'm not going to sit here naively and say, well, take all these F clients and, you know, it could be a chunk of a bunch of dollars and just kick them to the curb and hope for the best. I mean, some of these are going to be easy. Some of them are not going to be easy. But, you know, even if you can kind of fire a few, see how it goes. Fire a few, see how it goes. Fire a few, see how it goes. You're still going to end up better this time next year, like you said, with either more or the same revenue, but definitely with less stress and pressure.
Yeah. And the clients aren't going to do it. You got to do it. I mean, no client is going to come in and say, would you raise my fee? You're worth more. So if you don't institute this kind of review and whatever plan that you come up with and don't execute it, it's not going to happen. So it starts with you. You've got to have the plan and you've got to make sure it's properly executed.
And our folks who have done it have consistently come back to us and said, I wish we would have done this years ago.
Yeah.
And also they say our clients almost unfailingly accept the increases in fees without any complaint or comment, or they'll say, you know, I was kind of waiting for this. I feel like I've been paying you too little for years.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think clients in many instances value us more than we value ourselves. And if you just ask them to pay what you're worth, I think you'll be shocked how many of them won't bat an eye. Some will. There's always going to be somebody that's going to complain no matter what you do. But
look, we can be friends. We just don't have to do business together.
That's right.
You know,
that doesn't mean our friendship ends.
That's right. It's just an objective. This is what I need to be making to make it worth my time. And if you can't or don't feel like you should be paid, that's fine. That's fine. Then there are lots of other people that will take your business. But that's for me. I'm running my business. This is what I need to make this relationship continue.
And if you have business clients, they do the same thing. They're mm-hmm. not going to, you know, if they're a restaurant, they're not going to cook whatever you order. You're going to order off the menu like everybody else. So they do it. So they should expect you to do it as well. I don't want to get into details about particular pieces of technology, but you mentioned, and you probably got the best background in technology of anybody that I know. How does examining technology and making sure your technology is right, how does it play into this whole right-sizing and work-life balance? Where does technology fit into this process?
So I will say first, we need to back up a second, because technology is a tool to help you with your processes. It's not a replacement for processes.
Right.
So the first step is really to think about what are the things that went badly? How did they go badly? And then, can a piece of software help us do it better?
Right. Can it speed it up or make it more efficient or whatever?
Right. Whatever those things are. So let's take client information exchange as an example. So let's say we look at our tax season and we say, okay, well, we really struggled getting our information from the clients. Is there a way we can use technology to make it easier? Then you go down a rabbit hole of software, frankly. The right way to go about it is to say, okay, what are the things that are really non-negotiable pieces I have to solve? So, do you need a client portal for this? Does it have to have mobile capabilities? Does it, you know, what are your security requirements on that? And if you can objectively figure out what your must-haves are on software for whatever kind of software it is, it really helps a ton. And then the next piece, the next way to vet software, I think, is to ask peers, mm-hmm. which is, one of the values that we have at Padgett. We have almost 180 small-ish firms that are working kind of the same business model. So it's easy to have for us in our firms to have community of like-minded practices, but there are plenty of them out there outside of Padgett. So a suggestion on that would be to ask. There are folks that are out there that are super interested in technology and can give you, at least a shortened list of what these possible solutions are.
Yeah, because there's so much technology out there. It's almost overwhelming to try to keep up with it and decide what's best, what's the good one, what's the bad one. I know that's something you do take the lead of in Padgett and working with offices to try to narrow down those choices and come to our people and say, here are the products that we've looked at. Here's what we think works best. Go ahead and I'll ask my question.
Well, I was just going to say it's hard. And Googling doesn't help because all software sites look exactly the same and promise you the world. And say that they do all these things and have all these integrations, and they're marketing sites. They're built for sales. They're not built for accounting people. So yeah, so it's really tough. It's really tough.
How do you answer the common, I don't know if it's a complaint or a comment, and I'll blame it on people my age or older. Well, my clients don't deal with technology. They won't adjust. I have to do it the old fashioned way. Now, there might be one or two clients that's true for, but come on. They did.
Yeah, I will say
people are dealing with technology in every day.
Well, I will say COVID did us a favor in this regard that it forced a lot of people of all ages to at least somewhat embrace technology. So, I think about my mother, during COVID, if you needed to schedule an appointment or you needed to order food or you wanted to download a library book because you were so bored, you had to use technology to some degree. And so I feel like that there was a significant jump in folks who are becoming more tech savvy. Having said that, we do hear it from our firms. Well, I've got a segment of the population that just won't use software. They just won't use their phones. They won't they won't even email things to me, and they insist on dropping it off. So I think you have a decision to make. First, it is incredibly inefficient to run a practice where you're taking in, you're dealing with clients in seven different ways, where you're letting the client decide how they interact with you. Like your restaurant analogy, right?
Right.
We don't have a waiter come to the table and say, just what would you like and how would you like it prepared and when would you like it? And no, it's you know, there's a list of certain things. So if you can narrow the methods for your clients communicating with you and exchanging information with you as much as possible, that's a good start. If you deliberately feel there are some very important clients to me that will not use any kind of technology, they just won't, you have a decision to make. Are you going to keep those clients or not? And if you're going to keep them, is there a way that you can close the gap between what they're willing to, how they're willing to interact with you, against how you are want to run your practice? And that may be adding a virtual assistant or a person in the office to scan, to convert to digital. And you got to figure that into your profit. So are you willing to pay more to keep these clients? And I would say, when you really look at it, it's probably not worth it. It's probably not worth it to add staff or to add, assistance to just to make your clients happy. So it's tough. And again, going back to, I think we are built to help people. It's really hard to tell the little old lady with the shoebox, I can't do your return anymore this way. So it's a struggle.
Yeah. And these tend to be probably clients you've had for forever, you know, and so you feel a stronger obligation to them because they've been your client for 30 years and the way that you started with them was fine, but they want to still do it the way you did it when you started with them 30 years ago. So, you know, the one thing I can tell you, you can't keep them all, but if you want to keep one or two, do the things that we've talked about up to now to free up some time so they aren't such a burden, and pick the one or two that have been with you for 30 years and, you know, make a concession for them. But you can't do it in the masses.
No,
and they are used to technology more than they used to.
And I'll tell you too, you know, we talk about succession all the time at Padgett, and there are many firm owners who will be ready to retire soon and hoping to sell their practices. You're not selling the little old lady with the shoebox to anybody. So to your point, if you want to take on a certain number as like freebies, charity cases, pro bonos, you need to just recognize that that is what you are doing, and there will be no value to that part of the practice when you get ready to sell.
Right. Nobody besides people, you.
Nobody's going to buy it.
Yeah. Nobody's going to pay you for them. Mm-mm. We've talked a lot about technology in general. I mean, probably one of the bigger pieces of technology we all have is our tax software. Mm-hmm. Should we look at that every year? How do we analyze it? Some of it's just we know how to use it, so we assume it's the best because I know how to use it. But is that smart? I mean, how do I value? Why do some tax softwares cost $30,000 and some cost $300,000?
That's a really good question. and it's a question we look at Padgett every day. It's probably the most disruptive software change you can make in a tax heavy practice. I would say it definitely is.
Oh yeah.
I will also say, I don't think there's a very big delta between the worst software and the best software. So probably the best software that you can use is the software you're using. Unless mm-hmm. there's particular problems, like, none of them are really truly cloud-based, which is a deficiency in the whole industry. To a very strong majority, they are remote hosted desktop products, and that is the way it is. So I don't know. I mean, we are an UltraTax shop. Padgett is, but you know, I think most software is probably on par. I wouldn't advise, unless you've got serious deficiencies in your software, I think you can get a lot more bang for the buck looking at other technology to change or improve.
Yeah, I think, you know, in theory, every tax software should get the same result given the same information, because we're all trying to comply with the same tax law. So it's not a matter of who does what right versus wrong. Sometimes it's the base price, and then the add-ons add up, and you're actually paying more than you could have gotten in a bundle at another software. You mentioned the key one. If you know how to use it, and it's got all the functionality that you need. A lot depends on whether you're doing just individual returns, whether you're doing more complicated business returns and business entities. So you really have to look at your practice and say, what capabilities do I need? And if you find something that manages all your capabilities and is priced fairly, if you've ever changed tax softwares, it's no fun. And you don't want to do it. But sometimes companies force you into it. They get bought up, put out of business. They're all going to have a bad year every now and then, and they're going to make you angry, and you're going to want to run somewhere else. Or somebody's going to come up and offer you this great deal for the first year, and they're going to coax you into it. But pick the one that works, that's consistent with the kind of practice you want to have, that your staff knows how to use. Because it's not just you. It's your whole staff's got to learn a new one.
Yeah, and I'll say, if you are considering changing tax software, you need to make that decision probably by June for the following year, and you know, die by it. Make the decision, and then you're like, okay, well, we're in or we're out for the next year, because when you're looking at changing it, such a core piece of software, if you're going to go look for alternatives, it takes a long time to test them. It takes a long time to onboard a lot of softwares. You know, there are two in accounting. There are two probably prime conversion or switch seasons. One is the summer and one is like November, December. And that means you're ready to go. Not that you're making decisions in November, December, that you have made the decision. You have paid the money. You have prepped all the data, that you have gotten your staff trained, and you are changing. So in order to really do a November, December conversion, you've got to make the decision by June that you're going to do it. So whatever you, wherever you land, I guess I'm saying, you've got to make that decision in the next 2 months from now and stick with it until next summer.
And that's why all the software companies try to get you to renew in May. They want to lock you in because they know that's the prime time. They know two things. In May, you have more money than you'll probably have all year, so it's easier to pay them. And secondly, that if you go beyond that May-June time frame to make a decision, you're just asking for trouble to try to do it, you know, at year end. So they're all trying to get you locked back in.
Yep.
Okay, let's move a little bit. You know, one of the things that I know we talk about at Padgett, we're trying to be more diversified. There's a lot of different ways to make money in our industry. And there are some firms that will use April 15th, though I know it's not the absolute deadline, will get 95% of their revenue by doing taxes by April 15th. And then you sit around all year. How do you keep staff happy the rest of the year when there's no work, or what are you doing? What about diversifying your service and your product offerings? How do you do that, and why do you do that, and what's the advantages of doing that? Because that's something that we've when this company first started, we started mainly as an accounting firm for small businesses, and taxes were kind of a trailer to that. If you did the accounting, they had to file a tax return. Now, most of us, or not all most of us, but a lot of us have gotten into the thing where taxes are the driver. So what are the opportunities that are out there by diversifying your product offering to bring in revenue all during the year and not be so heavily tilted towards tax season?
Well, I mean, you said it, accounting work should be done throughout the year, right? And there's an opportunity to bill for that throughout the year. So if you look at, let's say a nice individual tax return might be, you know, $600-$800. I'm picking this out of the sky because clearly it depends. But if you get a $600 a month accounting client, that's actually a $7,200 client, you know, compared to a $600 return. So just by converting your mindset from the dollars to really like the annual revenue of a client, you can see that accounting services, payroll services, advisory services are all much of a bigger spread. So the reality is too, a lot of times you're doing the work anyway, you're just not charging for it. A lot of times,
particularly advice, we just want to give advice away to show how smart we are and not get paid for it.
Right. Right. We want our clients to be like, oh gosh, you're so smart, but we've saved them thousands of dollars and we're not charging them any for it. So I think the mindset has to be, how do we best serve our clients, and probably mostly business clients? How do we serve these business clients? Which, by the way, almost everybody's a business client now. Everybody's got a side hustle or some kind of gig or something. So we need to also think about our 1040 clients that have businesses as business clients, not just individual clients, but how can we serve them throughout the year? So there's the benefit of the revenue, right? Then the revenue increases exponentially if we can convert them to some kind of monthly engagement. We spread out the tax season compression a bit with our business mm-hmm. clients. Imagine if you walk into the office on February 1, you've got a tax return ready trial balance on your, right. your client, which is what happens when you're doing the accounting. If you're doing the accounting, it's already done by the end of January generally. So then you're just pulling it into software and it's done. So, a lot of times firms think of accounting and bookkeeping work, or, there are a million names for it, CAS work, BSO work, back office work, as low value. But if you need any indication, there are all the big, huge, biggest firms are building service lines in this, right? Like they've got divisions in this. Private equity money is going into firms that are not necessarily tax firms. They're getting investment from firms that are much more virtual accounting firms. So, even if you're not sure, like look where the smart money is going. Smart money is going on recurring monthly recurring revenue that's generally linked to accounting financial statement preparation or back office services. So
no, it's a great opportunity. And Amanda, your firm is almost 100% built around that. You do any tax returns?
We don't do any returns. We do 1099s. So our little tax season, I'm using my air quotes, our little tax season is like January 15 to February 1.
So you've built a whole firm built on doing the accounting work for businesses. Mm-hmm. And yet one of the things we hear from people in our industry is, well, they don't need us anymore. There's QuickBooks, there's Xero, your clients could be using QuickBooks. Maybe they are. They could be using Xero. Maybe they are. So talk about the value that you bring to that. We're not just being competing with technology. There's things that Amanda can do that no software can do.
Yeah, absolutely. So for one, I did have a very tax-heavy practice when I started my accounting firm. It was almost all tax return work. But I hated that, from February to April and then August to October, I couldn't do the stuff I liked, which was the accounting work. So I ended up selling off that part of my practice. Now we are basically exclusively accounting work. So to your question about, well, aren't we just competing with software? No. Have you looked at your clients' books that they've tried to do on their own? Right. They're not, a lot of times, not accurate. They're not optimized. They're using out of the box charts of accounts, which probably maybe aren't correct for them or the most appropriate. They aren't leveraging software connections. So while your business clients may have access to QuickBooks or access to Xero, and then maybe they're clicking a couple buttons and checking off some things, are they really leveraging like what I would call their operational software? So where they're making money. A lot of times they're using point of sale systems, e-commerce platforms, project costing systems. So are they connecting those to the general ledger correctly? So those are the kinds of things that we can add value as accountants and advisors that will save our clients time. If we save them time, they're willing to pay for it.
Oh, sure.
If we save them stress, they're willing to pay for it. So things that become easy for us, we can productize and put out there as a service and make pretty good money doing it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think a lot of them fail for the good advertising from the software companies. Like, well, anybody can do this. You just go buy software and, everything happens automatically and it'll be perfect and you don't need an accountant or a tax preparer. They don't want to do that stuff, and they don't know what they're doing and they don't know debits from credits. And,
I'll give you a story. I had a client that came to us that was using Xero that was trying to do their own stuff. And so you ask them on the discovery call, like, what is the shape of your books? Like, how do they're like, well, I have cleared all my bank lines, so it must be right. And you go in, you look, and like AR is negative $170,000, or they've got a chart of accounts that, this is also a true story, one of my clients on their own set up a general ledger line for every product that they sold. So they had about 600 lines for t-shirts, t-shirt revenue, t-shirt cost of goods sold, t-shirt asset, like inventory asset accounts. And so, yeah, sure, they could, you know, they can push buttons in their software, but not always a good idea.
And that's not what they want to do. They didn't get in business to do accounting. We got in business to do accounting. They got in business to make t-shirts or to serve food or whatever they did. Most of them don't want to do that, but they just want to go somewhere where it's they can hand it over, know it's getting done, know it's getting done accurately. You can use that data to help them throughout the year. I think the biggest thing that a year-round engagement with a business particularly does is it allows us to be more than just a collator of information during tax season. We can make differences to the business. We can make difference to their tax return because we're working in it in a real time. And all those questions you wish that you knew happened when they bring their taxes to you and you go, well, I wish you'd have called me or I wish you'd have told me. Well, if you've got an ongoing relationship with them throughout the year, you probably knew that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's incredibly frustrating to get a set of records in February and know that if you knew this 2 months ago, you could have changed something in their business life. And that happens all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell people, if you wait to deal with me from January to April, I'm just a human calculator.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much all I can do is I can take what's already happened and add it up and put it on a form. But during the rest of the year, I might can actually make a difference. I might can give you some advice that'll make you more money or save you some taxes. But that's over pretty much when December 31st is over.
Yeah. And this is the big thing folks need to be thinking about right now is like, how can you retool your entire year? Because if you have a traditional practice that's very compressed in the spring and the fall, you don't have you're going to be catching up. You know, you have to think about how can you retool your practice so that we are doing as much work as possible consistently throughout the year, keeping our staff consistently busy, getting in consistent revenue, and not feeling this pressure in February, March, April, and August and September. Those are the decisions that you guys need to make right now.
Right now. All right. In our last few minutes, let's hope we haven't convinced everybody they're doing everything wrong. They got to throw everything out, start over from scratch. High level, look at clients.
Mm-hmm. Look at price.
Work-life balance. Pricing is a big part of looking at clients. That's not just look at them and see what they do. How are they priced? Technology, different service lines. What are the other kind of big picture things that they should work with? And getting staff involved, obviously. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's it. I mean, if you are a practice owner and you can do those things, look at your clients and right-size your clients, evaluate how technology might change your workflow for the better and look at service offerings. If you spent, call it half a week doing that right now, you would have an infinitely better practice this time next year.
Yeah. And when you're listening to this, if you've just come off a tax season where you put in 7-day weeks and 20-hour days, it doesn't have to be that way. It really doesn't. There's great ways to make changes. Even I don't care if you've been in business for 2 months or 200 years, there's changes that you can make, and you can have a firm that will provide well for you financially, but allow you the fruits of that work to spend it with your family. And mainly, we have too many people in this industry who their health just declines because it's not healthy.
Yeah. I mean, what's the point? What's the point of having a business if you can't enjoy your non-business life?
Yeah.
So
it's time to do that. Go take a few days off or a week or two off, get to the beach, go wherever, the mountains, do whatever you want to do, get refreshed and come back and take advantage of the fact that at least some portion of the tax season is over. And let's don't repeat. Let's, you know, what's the saying? If you keep doing the same thing over and over again, expect different results. That's what definition of insanity. Mm-hmm. So let's don't fall into that trap. Any final parting words, Amanda? Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, it was my pleasure. I just send all the good vibes, healing energy out to all the accounting firm owners at this time of year. It's great to hang out with you, Roger, as usual. And everybody out there, congrats. You made it through another season.
You made it through. And if you're out at certain seminars, mm-hmm. conferences over the summer, IRS or Xero or scaling new house, you might run into one of us and come up if you do and say hello.
Please do.
And tell somebody about this podcast. Ask them to give it a listen and hope you enjoy it. And Amanda, thanks again. Thanks for everything you do at Padgett. But thank you for helping us with this podcast today. And we'll probably be talking again later today.
Sounds good. See you guys.
Thanks, Amanda. Thanks, everybody.
All content from this podcast by Small Biz Pros Incorporated, DBA Padgett Business Services, is intended for informational purposes only.